following podcast has adult themes and some strong language.
Hello and welcome to episode 6 of season 2 of Excuse the Jess. This week I will be talking about birthdays again, for no reason. Last time I dug into the history of birthdays. I say dug in, I didn't really go much beneath the surface. I got a few facts, and like a sister that loves the ice, let it go. Have I told you how busy I am at the moment? You should be lucky to have that. There I go again, blaming you for the shit show my life is. I apologise. I'm grateful to have you here. And can we now move on? Let's move on to a personal level and what birthdays mean to me. It means every couple of weeks I have to wish someone a happy birthday or moonpig them a card, which is perfectly unfair because I don't celebrate my birthday. Why is it okay at Christmas time for someone to say, I'm not celebrating, or say, I'm not doing cards this year as giving to charity, and I'm talking about the ones that tell you prior to December, not days before Christmas, thus ensuring they get all the cards, that they are not forking out for any. That, as a society, is perfectly acceptable, but when you say, I'm not celebrating my birthday, it is the subject of ridicule, and people skirting around the subject, sending a card that may not say happy birthday, but something like, happy anniversary of your birth, as if it's not the same thing, or to get a text message with the number of days you've been alive, as if they've cunningly navigated around the no birthday rule. And I should be so fucking grateful they remembered. Oh, I apologise again. I'm just really stressed. I haven't always been anti-birthdays. As a child, I was pretty fond of them. We used to have parties in the house, and the kids in the street would turn up along with carefully selected friends from school. Mum would spend hours in the kitchen on the Saturday morning of a party. Because birthdays always had to be on the weekend, regardless the day of your birthday. Mum would make jelly and blancmange. I don't know why, really, because I didn't know anyone who actually liked blancmange. I think it was the law in the late 70s and early 80s that every children's party had to have one. Then it would be the picky food, like cocktail sausages, pineapple and cheese, sausage rolls, crisps in bowls, sandwiches cut into square and jammy dodgers. The table was full, but that's all I can remember. It was a feast, though. I would be so excited on the morning of the party that my stomach would ache. Of course, Owen would wind me up, because that's what baby brothers do. He would say to me something like, I'm going to tell all your friends that you wet the bed or wear no knickers. And I would threaten him with something worse. Oh, I wouldn't wish for him to be alive now and tell my friends these things. The thing I remember most, though, was that he insisted he had to sit with me because he was my brother, which my parents would agree to because, I quote, he loves his big sister. It was actually because he wanted to be the centre of attention. Children are so egocentric. I remember the build-up more than the actual parties themselves. I have glimpses of memory of the table of food, playing pass the parcel, musical chairs, dancing. I remember the men removing themselves to another room drinking beer while the women at the party were there trying to organise everything. I remember Owen spilling red pop all over the food, which I think he did every party, but maybe only happened once. I remember loving it all. After Dad and Owen died, Mum shut off, so it was my grandmother who took over the mantle of being my birthday planner. My first birthday after the crash was my 10th, and I was getting a little old for parties anyway. This was the first time Nana took me up to London to see a show. That's how we called it then. We would see a show. Don't quote me, but I think it was Chess we saw that time. The one where they sang I Know Him So Well. I loved it. I couldn't tell you what it's about. It went over my head, and I haven't seen it since. But in that moment, sat in the theatre, it meant nothing else was going on outside of it. We also went to Harrods for tea and cake, which I thought was the height of elegance then. What I'm trying to say is my love for birthdays didn't stop as a child. When Nana died, Mum tried to assume the slack a little. She would take me into town to buy me clothes, but those birthdays sucked. When I turned 18, it was up to me what I wanted to do for my birthdays, and it invariably ended up with me with my head down the toilet after drinking too much. Then, Ems and afterwards Izzy came into my life and London trips were back on. There were other people too that came in and out of my life that made my birthdays fun. It was my late 30s that I decided enough was enough. I'd celebrated loads of them now. It was time to stop. Sometimes I'd still go away, catch some theatre or book a hotel overlooking the sea. London, though, is the easiest place to be on your own. Nobody blinks if you sit on your own or go to the cinema or theatre on your own. For a place so busy, it's easy to be quiet there. I'm not against having presents either. Please do buy me a present. I love presents. I just don't want you to feel like you have to buy me a present on a certain day. If you see something I might like at any time, I would be grateful. Bear in mind, there's no reason why I'm thinking about this or telling you this now. No reason at all. Latvian dancer and actor Mikhail Baryshnikov, yes, the one that played the guy that Carrie should have ended up with in Sex and the City, said, "I like to go to anybody else's birthday. And if I'm invited, I'm a good guest. But I never celebrate my birthdays. I really don't care." See, I'm not the only one. Tuesday morning and I was exhausted. I hadn't had a break and I had a full week ahead of me. I hadn't talked about it much last time, but in between meeting my manager's manager face to face, having 5 people fired through their actions but still, making up an imaginary partner so I could tell a wealthy businessman that the only person that fucks with me is my partner, getting smacked in the face by a woman that hated me and getting shouted at for not answering a work phone while I was still in shock, I was still trying to get meetings together so I could try and stop the factory being shut down imminently. When I put it like that, I don't need a weekend. I need to retire. We had another big meeting on the Monday afternoon. To get this one would mean we'd almost be there. It was to a board though, so there was no shock factor to be involved. Nars and I spent the morning perfecting the pitch, and he was going to take the lead because he was a high-powered American business person and I was a middle-aged woman from Cardiff. Of course, that was never said, but whatever works though. I was ready for Niles to go home and I'd go back to be a lowly employee. He disrupted my life enough. Tuesday morning and Niles and I had drunk far too much coffee and were jittery. We both were staring at the phone, willing it to ring. Phones don't ring half as much as they used to and that was usually a good thing. Now it was painful. The usually confident Niles was showing a much more anxious side. It was reassuring to see because it showed he cared. Not about me, the situation I mean. The moment I left the office, it seemed like the phone rang. I say this because when I returned from the toilet, Niles was on the phone. I couldn't read him. He deliberately looked away from me. He was saying yes and thank you. So no clues. I was convinced it was bad news and started to pace. What was the next step? Who could I contact next? It wasn't the end. There was still a chance. Plus, I had that grant form. The chances were good if we applied. Niles eventually hung up and turned to me. If this business thing hadn't worked out, he could have worked on the stage. He had a flair for the dramatic. He walked around the desk and headed in my direction, his face not portraying a thing. It was a negative. He wanted to look me in the eyes when he told me we were fucked. Instead, he just stared. I could bear it no longer and shouted at him, "Just tell me!" His face broke out into a wide grin and he hugged me, he literally hugged me, and said, "We did it!" I was so excited I hugged him back and started cheering. It was inappropriate, but a shot of light relief. Obviously, it wasn't complete until we signed on the dotted line, but the documents were being emailed to the legal department, and assuming all okay, an electronic signature would be created. That day we had a second good piece of news. The money found in that weird bank account was still there, and the banker confirmed they could transfer it to another account. The OM, as the register holder, would just have to sign a bit of paper at the bank. Again, yes, I'm being slightly vague. Just trust me on this one. It's not even that important. It just meant we were one step closer to the goal. I was positive I could get that grant, and that would be it. For now, anyway. After we celebrated with a posh coffee, I started on the grant form. Niles was in a meeting with the OM, and I could have some peace. We were in a weird place. Not true. I was in a weird place with him. He just saw me as an employee. One that sorts his shit out when his PA is across the Atlantic. After he declared he was so bored on Sunday, I genuinely thought he was talking about me. He quickly clarified he meant where he was staying, a hotel just off a busy highway, working in the suburbs, as he put it. A huge culture shock from living and working in New York. He asked about Cardiff, and I told him it was exactly like New York, apart from the impressive buildings, theatres and shops. However, we did have a big fuck-off castle in the centre of it, so we were obviously winning. As long as he was happy to commute, which I gave him approximately 2 days before moving back closer, then we could find him a five-star luxury apartment in the centre of the greatest city in the world. But before that, he was going to Cardiff. It was relatively easy. Everything is easy when you can pay for it. And his company was paying for it, and it better not come out of that factory budget. An online form, a phone call, and we were meeting someone with keys outside a gorgeous flat. To even come with parking. I was so jealous. It had a sprawling view of the city. And no, you couldn't see my house from it. Gorgeous furnishings, and it even had a hot tap. You know the ones where it squirts out boiling water. This, for me, was the height of luxury. The actual finance bit, I wasn't party to. It was the only bit I wanted to be, though, because I wanted to know how many nights he had booked it. A short visit to Tesco Metro close by, and he was all set. He was so much happier, though. He could see people in shops, and he had a kitchen. I had done a good deed. Or I had worked the entire day for free. I couldn't work out which. The American writer, actor and goddess that is Mindy Kaling said, "Anyone can have a birthday. It requires nothing. Murderers have birthdays. It's the opposite of anything that I believe in. And I don't like at work when you have to stop everything to say happy birthday to someone. I feel like that's for children." If Mindy Kaling is saying it. By Thursday, we had two signed contracts. Yes, it moved that quickly because it needed to. More money was in the bank account and a grant application, which was nearly finished. It was all coming together nicely. That was when Niles threw a curveball. He was talking about how he wanted to know more about Cardiff before he was due back home. When he said due home, I was gutted, but knew it would be good for me. He asked if I was free Saturday to be his tour guide. He started to say that it wasn't, but I interrupted and I told him I knew he wasn't asking me out because he was with someone. Plus, he was attractive and I was not, which I didn't need to say. "But what happened if I had meant it that way?" he said, trying to be a bit playful, and because I had rudely interrupted him. So I said he had a girlfriend, so it was a moot point. Plus, I still had a black eye to prove it was frowned upon. "I admire you," he suddenly said. "What, for having principles?" "No. Well, yeah, but for just working through all this shit without, you know, losing it." "Coffee," I told him, and he just grinned. I thought that might be the end of it, but he asked again about Saturday. Fuck, I wasn't doing anything, but that was the point. I wanted to stay home, be miserable, and speak to no one. It was a good plan, so I could say no. He had actually fed me the last 2 days, now being able to cook in his apartment, and soon he would be gone, and I would probably never see him again, which made me even more miserable. I relented, told him the day would be on him, and he happily agreed. Then he checked again if I had plans, like we hadn't just had the conversation. So I told him again no, and the only plans I had were for Friday night, where I mentioned I was seeing friends for a meal. Casual thing, you know? And he said, "That sounds good. I'll come." I think he might be a genius. Canadian musician Elisa Cara said, "I've never hosted a party in my life, not even my own birthday party. I'd feel really uncomfortable saying, 'Hey everybody, let's celebrate me.' I'm not antisocial. I don't hate people." See? Again, not just me. Of course, Ems and Izzy were so excited I was bringing a guest. I was sure I was going to be humiliated. That, however, came earlier on the Friday than I anticipated. I had finally almost completed the grant application, which I was struggling to do with everything else going on at work, when I had to fill in the final question. All I needed to know was, how long had we been operating in Wales? I asked Niles if he knew, and he said, 6-7 months? I replied, no, since the company has been operating, not since the takeover. Niles told me there was no old left. It was all part of the US company. I let that sink in. I could feel the bile in my throat and I sunk my head in my hands. It was all for nothing. How did I not realise this? We weren't going to be saved. This was it, and it was me that fucked it up, because I'd been concentrating on the wrong thing. How long did we need to be operating to get the grant? Niles asked. 2 years, I softly replied, and headed out of the office. I went to my spot, stared at the view, because I wouldn't be able to soon. Fuck, fuck, fuck. How the fuck had I been so stupid? I could hear some of the employees coming out for lunch by the benches and they were laughing. If they knew what I had done, I would have got punched again and deserved it. Oh well, at least Niles didn't admire me anymore, I thought. Maybe cancel tonight and tomorrow because, boy, I needed to wallow. I was desperately trying not to cry. A couple of tears escaped, but for the most part, I succeeded. This was not the time. I was a paid professional. Well, I was paid anyway. For a week, I felt like I was winning, and that really happened, so it was only fair I'd end the week by losing. This chapter of my life was over, bar the encore. Niles told me it was just a setback. There were other avenues. I asked him if it was enough, but it wasn't. The deadline was looming, and I was out of ideas. There didn't seem to be any from elsewhere either. You see, I knew the time a grant application takes to go through, and that was buying us some time. Time to come up with more ideas, more tactics. The possibility of producing a new contract by next week was slim to none, and I just wasted a week on a pointless form. I had the sudden need to get drunk, which I couldn't do because tonight and tomorrow, I would be spending time with my boss. Good news was that soon, it wouldn't be an issue. I gave the directions to Niles and said to meet at the restaurant. I instructed Ems and Izzy we were to meet earlier to have one drink before going to the restaurant. Simon wasn't coming, and I gather that had something to do with Ems, not me. Although I hadn't forgotten the look he gave me at Samuel's party. Though it would be a cosy fivesome. Actually, this was the first time in a long time that the fivesome wouldn't be because I didn't have anyone. Izzy's partner, Jason James, was coming a bit later, so it was just myself, Ems and Izzy who met in the pub first. We all had a double Hendrix and Slimline tonic each and toasted. Well, me. It calmed me right down because I was about to meet Niles on a social basis rather than work. It could sort of be argued that was true of Sunday, but that was unexpected. This wasn't. This was me introducing him to my friends who knew I liked him. But he didn't like me and just invited himself out of boredom, and it was ridiculous. If you ever wondered what it's like to be a complete loser, this was a shining example. We managed to get to the table with 5 minutes to spare. I put a small bottle of hand sanitizer on the table and instructed people they were to shake hands, then they were to sanitize. Izzy and Ems knew straight away when Niles walked in because I sort of froze. It was like seeing him again for the first time, all over again. He looked casual smart, jeans, shirt, nothing exciting. I realise I've never really described what he looks like, and I'm kind of reluctant to because it pisses me off in stories when we have to stop to describe what a person looks like. I don't care what some third-party character thinks of the hero. He looked geeky is the best way I think I can describe him. Now I've taken you completely out of the story like some fourth-rate writer. Back to the moment he came in. He looked around so I waved and caught his attention. He smiled at me and my stomach flipped. This was ridiculous, I thought. Did I mention I was a grown-up? He came over to the table and I introduced him to Izzy and Ems. They did all shake hands and use the hand sanitizer as predicted or instructed. Niall sat down next to me and said he would like to buy us all a drink as a thank you for inviting him. We all protested, but he wouldn't have any of it. He called the waitress Rover, and as soon as he opened his mouth, she was all over him. He was so confident. I saw Izzy and Ems look at each other. They were slightly impressed too. They were 100% impressed when he asked for the champagne. I told Niles it was too much, but he was adamant, and the waitress couldn't wait to rush back with the bottle in an ice bucket and the glasses. Jason James arrived shortly afterwards and was immediately handed a glass of champagne. Without knowing why the champagne was here, he assumed it was for me and said, "A toast for Jess." Niles came in with, "You know what amazing job she's done?" I pointed out that failing wasn't that amazing. Jason James interrupted, "No for her," and I tried to stop him. Instead, Izzy, Ems and Jason James said together loudly, "Birthday!" I shrunk back in my seat. I wanted to kill them, or me. Either would have done. Niles turned in surprise and asked if it was my birthday today. "No, it isn't," I said, and thanked the guys for their understanding. "It's tomorrow," Izzy announced. Way to make it worse. I told Niles I didn't celebrate my birthday and my friends were just trying to torture me. He asked if we should cancel tomorrow, and I told him no, the distraction would be good, and the truth was, I was actually looking forward to it. We ordered food and more champagne, for which I insisted Niles won't be paying. Jason James and Niles hit it off straight away, comparing notes on their various visits back and forth to their home cities of New York and Vancouver. By the time the food came, it was all fine. Everyone was getting on and it started not to feel weird at all. I admit that might have been down to the double G&T and 3 glasses of champagne. In fact, I think for a full 5 minutes, I had fun. Then I had to look around. See Niles and Jason James acting as old friends. Ems and Izzy being old friends and me. I would always be the odd one out and it started to feel incredibly lonely. I took a large gulp of champagne and then figured the last thing I needed was more alcohol. I was getting maudlin or realistic, one of the two. I drank a full glass of the tap water left on the table and slipped away silently. After reapplying lippy and brushing my hair in the toilets, I decided I couldn't hide any longer and went out. I suddenly heard someone shout, "Jessica J. Garner!" And I felt sick, Shit, shit, shit. Strangely, I don't call myself that in real life. It was just something I put in the podcast. I looked around for the direction of the voice, and there was Ben sat in the bar with another guy. He called me over and gave me a big bear hug. "What are you doing here, gorgeous?" he asked. And I pointed in the general direction of my friends, who were glaring at me. Did I mention I don't like Ben? Probably, but here's the reminder anyway.
"I feel the love in the room," Ben laughed.
"Nah, that looks for me," I told him. He introduced me to the guy he was with, a colleague of his, and then went straight into it.
"Ben, you called me Ben."
He wasn't cross. I don't think I've ever seen him cross. He was so laid back, he was horizontal.
"Why, Ben?"
"After the clock," I explained. I watched his face as the confusion turned to glee, then to proud, and I swear he put his hands on his hips if he was Superman who had just saved the world again.
"Best podcast I've ever listened to," Ben declared, which made me laugh.
His colleague looked at Ben confused, so Ben said, "Excuse the Jess? This is the Jess?" As if the colleague would know what the fuck that meant. Ben suddenly looked around me and I followed his gaze. It was Niles. I could feel the heat rise in my face. How long had he been there? I prayed he hadn't heard about the podcast.
"We're just getting drinks. What do you want?" Niles asked me, then looked to Ben.
I introduced Ben, whose name isn't really Ben, to Niles, whose name isn't really Niles. Not like that, I said their real names. I told Niles I just wanted water, but he didn't move, so I guessed I was going back to our table. I indicated to Ben I was going. "Sunday night?" he asked, and I nodded. Back at the table, another bottle of champagne was ordered, and I treated myself to a non-tap sparkling mineral water, much to the annoyance of everyone. "What's he doing here?" Ems demanded. "I invited him to annoy you," I replied, before asking to change the subject. I didn't get my way because Izzy jumped in. "We just worry about you," like I was some petulant 18-year-old who spent a little too much time with drink and drugs. I could feel my skin prickling. I was annoyed, yes, but I also felt embarrassed and stupid and couldn't bear to look at Niles. I know he was looking at me, though. I shot a look at Ems and Izzy that said, "Continue if you dare," and they both took the hint. Unfortunately, Jason James completely missed it and said, yet again, for the 1,000th time, that I was missing finding someone who would adore me. It took all my willpower just to sit there and take that utter bullshit. I mean, I might have if Niles hadn't been there, or I might not have felt so ridiculously hurt by the complete insensitivity of it. Instead, I calmly said that as the only single person sat at the table, I think I had more of an idea about what I was, or not, missing out on. Niles left the table and disappeared towards the toilets. Izzy full-on elbowed Jason James in the stomach, shouting, "What do you have to do that for?" He looked confused. "But we always say that," he countered. "Not when a manager is sat there," Izzy huffed, as if she was the innocent in all this. Ems grinned. "Especially as he obviously adores her." Izzy and Jason James started nodding and joining in. "And that's my cue to leave then," I told them. "Let me know who pays and I'll transfer the money." They all protested, but I was exhausted, physically and mentally. Niles came back to the table and I told him I was going. "Me too," he said. And there were more cries of, "No, stay, it's still early." Niles said he got the check, but they were on their own from now on. What was wrong with him? I said, "No, we can pay for ourselves." He shrugged and said it was a thank you for letting him crush my birthday meal. We got outside and I thanked him and was about to go. He had a 5-minute walk. I had to get a taxi. He insisted that he was going to put me in a taxi. I went on my app and called one, which said they were 7 minutes away. I said I would be fine. He said he would wait. The taxi took about 3 minutes, which I was a bit annoyed with. It was nice just talking to him. As I went, I thanked him again, and just as I'd done with my friends minutes earlier, he reached forward and kissed my cheek. Fuck me, it was hot. I felt the warmth of his lips on my face the whole taxi ride home.
I got to Niles' apartment around 10:30 on the Saturday morning. He was running late, which was a cheek because I had to get a taxi to his to be there on time. Niles said he'd pay for today, but that didn't feel good because he had paid for the meal the night before when he really shouldn't have. A healthy slice of guilt too to start the day. Happy birthday to me. Niles explained he hadn't slept well. Welcome to my world, I wanted to say, but that would have been churlish. As you can imagine, he kept the apartment meticulously clean. Even his laptop and work on the dining table was neat. I thanked him again for paying for the meal, and it prompted him to say happy birthday, which I hadn't meant. I told him my friends were happy to have met him, and they liked him more than me. He said good, because they love you. That wasn't me blowing smoke up his arse there. They did. The text messages I received from three of them, yes, three, because Jason James never texts me, but did last night, were about how much they liked him, which was great really, because I had already told them my feelings about him. They also told me I wasn't completely mad because those feelings were reciprocated, which was kind, but utter horseshit. Niles started putting his work into neat piles and put them on a shelf, then put his laptop away. There were no glasses on the table, and I still hadn't worked out why he wore them sometimes and not others. It was mesmerising, but also really daft, because he was going to put it all out again. He wasn't ready then. He picked up a cloth and started to wipe the table. I took the opportunity to look at the view again, and it was stunning. I'd never seen Cardiff from this angle before, and it looked impressive. I asked him how he was getting on in the apartment, and he made all kinds of noises how much he liked it there. He was being kind. His home was an apartment off Central Park, but it made me like him more. He announced he was ready to go just as the notification noise went off on his phone. Niles picked up the phone and read something. He said okay and flicked something on the phone. And I heard my voice. I froze. He looked embarrassed and quickly shut the phone off. I might have been up late listening to your podcast, he finally said. It took me a second to realise how he knew, but then remembered Ben. He'd been listening longer than I thought. I felt like a million emotions in seconds. Crushing humiliation, stupidity, fear, more crushing humiliation. But I landed on tired. That threw me. I was tired of it all. Tired of having to deal with every fucking thing going on, and all I wanted to do was go home, go to bed. And I saw no reason why I couldn't. I'm gonna go, I quietly said and started to walk towards the door. Niles stood in my way, not in a threatening manner, just to stop me and ask me not to go. He said he liked it, how it was much more than my life story. A mediation of life. Any other thoughts? I asked somewhat sarcastically. He replied that he wanted to know more about me and less my thoughts about TV. Be sure to hit like, subscribe and give it 5 stars, I told him. He laughed, thinking I was joking, which I evidently was. I was still a little mad and humiliated, which was unreasonable because it was me who put it out into the world. I did what I was good at, though, and pushed it down. Are you ready, I asked. For anything, he replied. We first went to Cardiff Castle and did the general 50-minute tour. He was fascinated. Thought it was amazing to have it all on my doorstep. I admitted I hadn't been properly inside the castle since my school days, which were 10 years ago. He said next time he wanted to do the personal tour. Next time. Then we jumped in a taxi and went down to Cardiff Bay. It's a 10-minute ride and Niles was confused why we were going out to the centre, which had, and I quote, everything there in walking distance. But he was ridiculously pleased we did. He saw the water tower by Roldal Place and shouted, it's Torchwood! He grabbed my hand and walked me quickly towards it. I was struggling to comprehend that he even watched it. But it was more than that. He liked Doctor Who. Well, he and his daughter did. He watched the first few of the new series on a loop when his daughter was young. His daughter, let's just call her Rose, was obsessed by it. She was now 14 and maybe very embarrassed to hear her dad talking that way. He handed me his phone and posted some really cringy photos in front of it. I told him pointing at stuff was so over. He told me he was 52 and he could do the fuck he liked. Yeah, he swears as much as me. It's kind of an art form. After that, he insisted that I come in for some pictures, reasoning that he knew I liked Doctor Who because it was my ringtone. That fucking podcast. After a couple of selfies, he requested a passing couple took pictures and he put his arm around me while this poor young couple wondered why these middle-aged dicks were still interested in Torchwood. And we heard. Nala said, at least this is here. It's not like we can do a tour of Sunnydale. And I was completely baffled. Your ringtone, he explained. And I realised he heard the Buffy theme on my ringtone on that Zoom meeting. Well, if he had still come to Wales after that, that was on him. After we walked past the Millennium Centre, across Mermaid Quay, and towards the mucky water, we walked across the Broadwalk and down the steps. If he loved the water tower, or the fountain as we like to call it, he was going to lose his mind over the next bit. We walked towards what looked like a shed with pieces of paper all over it. When the title came into view, he grabbed my hand again so we could go quicker. We were heading towards Yanto's shrine. Yanto was a character on Torchwood who was tragically killed off in the Children of the Earth series, which is shown over 5 nights on the BBC in the UK in 2009. It was Torchwood at its pinnacle. Shortly after Yanto Jones gave his life in defence of the Children of the Earth, which is how the plaque on the wall describes it, an informal shrine was set up as this building appeared in the episode. People still come from all over the world and pay tribute to the fictional character, even though that was 13 years ago, which begs the question how a now 14-year-old was really into it. Maybe there were reruns, or maybe a father got his daughter into it. We had a lovely meal at the Bayside Brasserie with lots of wine. It was perfectly pleasant. Read perfectly pleasant as perfect way to spend a Saturday lunchtime. He can talk too. I mean, I love that. But when he gets going, there's no stopping him. I think he may have thought he had to catch me up on his life, the way he knew so much about mine from the podcast. His parents are now retired, but his older sister was a lawyer, especially in women's rights. She's campaigning now with Roe versus Wade being overturned. Told him she sounds amazing, and he confirmed she was. He said he thought we would get on, which was a lovely idea, but we were never going to meet. He met his former wife in his 30s, and they were divorced within 10 years. They never planned to have children, but Rose came along, and she sounds adorable. I saw pictures of them all. Then came the bit I was dreading. The current girlfriend or partner, whatever you want to call her. I choose to call her Daphne. However, she sounded lovely too. A teacher in a private school, but a teacher nonetheless. They'd only been dating a month when the pandemic hit and they decided to look after each other. I really wanted to hate her, I did. But nothing he told me about her was particularly bad. I reminded myself it didn't matter if she was in the picture or not. He would never be interested in me that way. That made it better. He stated they were having problems though, and that's why he came to Wales to sort out the business himself. He needed some breathing space. She needed it too. Was he doing the old my girlfriend doesn't understand me bit? I thought. Didn't sound like it though. He just seems sad the way things are. It was later in the day than I thought, so I got a taxi to take us straight to the municipal buildings and the National Museum. I thought he might like the architecture because he seemed fascinated by it in the castle. We were walking towards the law courts and he suddenly said, "I'm not sure that senior management would like you having a podcast out." I stopped dead in the street and said, "You're senior management. Are you telling me to take it down?" He looked thoughtfully and then he said, "I'm thinking if they knew." "You hated it?" I asked. He shook his head. "I liked it. I said nothing, continued walking, and he followed me. We had a quick look in the museum, which is free to visit, then I gave him a walking tour. We went past the new theatre and down into Queen Street. Queen Street used to be the place to be in Cardiff, and it had two cinemas and a nightclub, not forgetting the fabulous Woolworths. Now, well, let's just say it's no Fifth Avenue. We walked towards the Principality Stadium because I wanted to show him the Victorian and Edwardian arcades. Again, he described them as quaint, with the shops and cafes in them. Little snapshot of the past. After a bit more walking, I pointed out that Cardiff had a lot more to offer than the city centre, but that was all we had time for. He said good because he was dying to get another drink. A man after my own heart. Stop it! We managed to get a table at the Botanist as it was only 5 p.m. and we both enjoyed a bottomless porn star before opting for more wine. Niles insisted on paying again as it was part of the deal of being forced to be a tour guide. I told him I didn't actually spend my spare time being forced to do things. Then he reminded me I spent the Saturday before organising a game of football for 7-year-olds. It was an excellent point. Niles was quiet for a while, just lost in his thoughts, and then announced he could spend time here. I laughed. Yep, I get that. New York, Cardiff. He protested he was serious, but really how? If he was showing me around New York, we would have been in a helicopter or atop of a tall building or seeing amazing shops. I pointed all this out and he said that here was quieter. Stuff to do, but still more laid back and with more history. I said he was welcome to move here and we were a very welcoming city. I expected him to laugh and he said, I wish. I couldn't leave my daughter though. He was fucking serious. I needed a second to catch my breath, but then he dropped the bombshell that he booked a table at the Ivy for 7 p.m. I wasn't dressed for the evening. My shoes were made for walking, not for a Saturday night meal. I pointed this out, but he said it was ridiculous. I looked perfectly good. How the hell did he know about the Ivy anyway? He told me he lived in London for just over a year in the early 2000s. Of course he did. He seemed to be one of those people who've had a life. He booked it last night when he found out about my birthday. It would be his treat, which again, I wasn't comfortable with. It would be 50-50 this time, which he agreed to. Why had I picked the most expensive place to have principals, though? Beyond me. We had a row in the Ivy. He said Black Widow could be the only one that died in Vormir, and I argued it should have been Hawkeye, because he just spent 5 years on a killing spree, while the Black Widow was working towards saving the Earth. Niles made the mistake of saying that Hawkeye Clint had a family that would come back, whereas Black Widow Natasha didn't. Well, if I did. I stated, therefore, that Clint was worth more because he had children. He started to stutter no, but I wouldn't let it go. I told him that it was reassuring to know that if it was us up there, he would wave me off the cliff. He made a deep sigh and said, it's like talking to my sister. I really liked the sound of his sister. After I ate my own weight in food, I had to admit it was time to call it a night. Because I'm ever the gentleman, I started heading towards Niles' apartment with the view to stop by a main road to call for a taxi. It wasn't especially late, only around 9 p.m, but it was dark. As I reached the point where I needed to stop, I thanked Niles for a really lovely day. It had been lovely. A gorgeous, unexpected day, and the best birthday I've had in a long time. He said it was the other way around, and he thanked me, said the day had been awesome. Then he threw a curveball. He said, as it was early, did I want to go back to his apartment for coffee? I don't think I hid my surprise. And he started stuttering something like I don't. I immediately put him out of his misery. This is what I said, And it's exactly what I said, because I've played it over repeatedly in my mind. I said, "It's okay. I know you just mean coffee. I know you've got no feelings towards me that way. It's just it's late, and if I were your partner, I don't think I would be too impressed if I knew a woman was hanging around your apartment late in the evening. Not even if you sent her a pic of me would she like it. Plus, I need to go home and sober up, so thank you. And in any other circumstances, I would have loved it." He nodded, as if sobering up himself. Then he said something that made me realise he wasn't sober at all. He said, "Jess, I wish you'd realise how fucking awesome you are." Then he hugged me and kissed my cheek. A taxi came almost immediately and I got in. Niles made me promise to text him when I got home, but it was directed more at the taxi driver. It took 10 minutes and I held in the tears until I turned the key in my door. I wasn't fucking awesome. I was barely thinking about that woman sat in their home in New York. I was thinking about me and how spending more time with Niles would be bad for me. I was completely selfish. I text Niles to say I was home and good night. He texted me back wishing me sweet dreams. They were more nightmares. Absolutely fabulous actor, Joanna Lumley said. "I always knew that good stuff would come along when I was older. So when I was 18, I longed to be 30. When I was 30, I longed to be 50. I always looked forward to my next birthday. I need to be more Lumley." I had another stress dream. I was back in the conference room at work, setting up for a meeting. Niall came in and pulled all the blinds in so no one could see in. I asked him what he was doing and he said what he'd wanted to do for ages. He suddenly had superhuman strength because he lifted me up and sat me on the conference room desk, demanding I close my eyes. I can feel him lean into me and I was so ready for it. I felt his hot breath coming closer and closer into my face. Suddenly he picked up my legs and then quickly spun them around so I was sat fully on the table. I opened my eyes and he was laughing at me. "Fuck me, that's funny," he said. "Like I could ever be interested in you. Look at you." Then the conference room door burst open and my colleagues started filing in. Not just the current ones, but the ones that had been fired because of me, including Numbers Guy and Catherine. They were jeering, shouting obscenities, and Catherine was making punching impressions. Niles demanded hush as Sarah walked in with champagne. In one jump, he leapt on the table, and even in that state, I was admiring his prowess. He grabbed my arms and lifted me up so I was standing next to him and started to speak. "People, can I have your attention? Thanks for playing along, but I think we've taught this little bitch a lesson. From Monday, we're back to normal. And she is out of here." Loads of cheering ensued. People started thumping the conference room table. Then he leant forward, kissed my cheek and then whispered in my ear, "You're a fucking ugly mess, Jess." I felt sick and cold, but it wasn't going to happen. I wasn't going to show my fear or my devastation. Out of nowhere, everyone had a glass of champagne and a wheelie chair was on the table with us. Now threw me on it and started revving up the crowd. They all shouted, "Do it, do it, do it," as he moved the chair back and forth. He suddenly gave the chair an almighty push and I was sent flying across the desk towards the brick wall. This time I didn't stand up. And as the wall loomed closer and closer, I shut my eyes tight and let it happen. I felt my body slam into that wall and woke up. My weirdly wired brain was trying to tell me something. And it wasn't that Niles didn't reciprocate my feelings. I never thought that for a minute, or that the people in work didn't like me. Again, this was a fact. It was trying to tell me that the way I knew to save the factory in the short term was not only right, but really bad for me. That's enough from me. Thank you so much for listening. It just leaves me to say, please come back. I'm not needy or anything, but do what you want. Also, a lot of this stuff is from the internet, and did you know the internet can lie? You can find me on Instagram at ExcuseTheJess, and let's do this again soon.
Excuse the Jess was written and performed by Jackie J. Sarah. It is a Deliciously Bright production. If you enjoyed this, please click follow and give us a 5-star review, or donate via Buy Me a Coffee. All details, including full credits, can be found on the website excusethejess.com.